You're listening to TalkTainmentRadio.com.
The views and opinions expressed are those of the host and guest and not necessarily those of TalkTainmentRadio.com, the management, the staff, or K&E World Network, LLC.
Your girl man save her, better believe it, get on your knees and pray hard, then pray hard, and never look back. Once the world forgave you, then do right, then do good, and it's so hard to do right, when you do wrong, when I turn right, but you turn all the way, lele.
Hensha, and welcome. We're glad you're here for a conversation with Dawn Karima, energetic, exciting, entertaining, and informative.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Oh, thank you so much for joining us today. My name is Dr. Dawn Karima, and I'm very honored to have this conversation today and glad all of you have joined us for it. I'll ask our guest, as we always do, will you please introduce yourself to us?
Hi, Dawn. This is Amaranthia Sipia. I'm the co-founder of Sista Create with Rising. I'm really happy to be here today.
I'm happy you are here. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for inviting me.
And thank you also for the wonderful microgrant that you shared with me. I'm truly blessed and honored to receive it and very grateful.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. And we can't wait to feature you. We plan to feature you this week on our Instagram. So, and I can't wait to talk more about that.
Wonderful. Well, let's do. I mean, I'd love to know. Let's start with your name, Sista Create with Rising. Will you tell us about that, please?
Yeah, so the name, it's something that my mom and I came up with together. My mom, Claire Jones, the co-founder, and encourage people to check out her talk with you from, I think it was about 2 weeks ago, right? We came up with the name in 2021, at the end of 2021. After our first Art in Mind show, and it's our virtual art show in a disability accessible film event and showcasing these artists of BIPOC artists and marginalized artists. And we, after that show, we wanted to highlight how our events mostly focus on women and femmes of femme expressing creatives. And our first show was all about that, along with our second show. And we thought, okay, well, we want to use the word Sista to highlight that on top of kind of referencing slang used in the Black community so people know this is a Black-owned project. Obviously creative because of how we highlight these marginalized creatives and then rising to show how we're helping these creatives rise through funding them, through showcasing them, making sure that their voices are heard through this small project. And sometimes we've been told by these artists when we uplift them, when we showcase them, that sometimes it's their first time being showcased in that way. And so it helps them get it in and find a way to develop themselves further. So there's a lot behind the name, and I'll credit my mom for coming up with the full name, but we had a lot of conversation about it.
That's beautiful. That's wonderful. And where can folks find
you?
Your website, your socials, where can they find and connect with you?
Yeah, they can connect with us on SistaCreativesRising.com. Again, it's S-I-S-T-A. And creativesrising.com. They could also find us on our Instagram, which is the same, Sista Creative Rising, our LinkedIn, same name. And they could even email us at info@sistacreativesrising.com.
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. And what caused you to decide to be a project instead of maybe a 501c3 or something like that?
Yeah, we decided that I don't know. I feel like with being a project, it's really just my mom and I that work on this together. And then when we do something like Art in Mind, we go and work with artists and or we develop a team, we hire them, we put them on the contract, and then so they're not like a permanent part of the team. So we feel like with a project, it gives us more control to be able to do things individually and together. So right now we're like sole proprietors doing it, with a goal to become an LLC at some point as we build and as we get bigger. A lot of people do think that we're a nonprofit, but we're not. We decided that we want to use this project as a way to bring in income to build ourselves as Black disabled family, to make sure that we could take care of ourselves through our passion while also helping others by funding their passion. So we have that kind of charity part of it as well. And I know there's some controversy, especially in the disability community, about nonprofits and how sometimes those funds or the support isn't what's always wanted. And so we've always seen that feedback in the disability community that is that a lot of disabled people rather work with a project or, you know, some kind of grassroots thing instead of a nonprofit. They feel like it's caters more to the community than some other nonprofits do. And we've had our own experiences of nonprofits that have been negative. So we've decided, you know, we're just going to keep going the way we're going.
Wow. There's so much bravery in what you're saying, I think. I see a lot of courage in what
Thank
you're
you.
Doing. Because a lot of folks, let's face it, I mean, if we were to talk to many people, there are many people who dreamed of a life in the arts or wanted to be artists.
Right.
And yet the rejection they faced or systematic navigation, right? It's sometimes it's really hard to get a grant or something like that.
Yes.
Or, you know, and so they were frustrated by that and gave up. And so I applaud you for not giving up, first of all, and then becoming accessible to more creatives and the generosity in all that. There's a space.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you. There's a space, though, that I really want to talk about with you a little bit right now, and that's the still COVIDing space. That's a space that I'm in, and it's a space where I've met you. And so when I say still COVIDing, what does that mean to you?
Yeah, so COVIDing means, that you're still masking, that you're still isolating, maybe because you have a family member who is, you know, at risk of developing complications from COVID, or you're just someone who doesn't want to be further disabled by COVID, or you don't want to develop a disability. In our case, since we're a still COVIDing family, both me, my mom, my dad, we are all have invisible disabilities. And my parents are both cancer survivors. My mom, Claire, is a more recent cancer survivor. My dad's been in remission for 20 years, but he's still at risk of it coming back. And with my mom, she's at risk of two blood cancers, lymphoma and multiple myeloma. And so on top of me as well, having mental health disabilities, like panic disorder and agoraphobia and some other underlying health issues, we don't want to risk being further disabled, because catching COVID could mean that we could pass, or we could get very, very sick and become hospitalized.
Mm-hmm.
And so especially when it affects marginalized communities the most, Black and brown people the most, we don't want to be in a medical system that doesn't cater to our communities. So we do a lot of advocacy around this and make sure that we raise awareness that anyone could become disabled at any time because of COVID. Even if you're not necessarily someone who is, you know, high risk, you can become high risk just from one infection. So we do a lot of research. We do a lot of, we share a lot of facts. We always use our platform to raise awareness about how this is a disability justice issue.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for that. Really, thank you for caring about others and taking care of yourself as well. And so your pictures are always beautiful. You have radiant fashions, and then you're masked, as an accessory.
Thank you so much.
That's wonderful. And I think that goes a long way toward empowering other people. You know, sometimes we just have to see other people do it and have fun doing it, enjoy doing it, look good doing it. And
yes,
that's what we need, you know. So let's talk a little bit about disability justice in the arts, because I feel like there are a lot of people who don't even know that's a thing, right? They just sort of like, when
yes.
we talk about the arts, unfortunately, there's many people that are marginalized. And yet the arts should be inclusive, I believe, right?
Oh, yes, of course. And you're right. Not many people know what disability justice is, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's part of our work as well, that especially with incorporating COVID, but also doing everything virtually,
uh-huh.
is making sure that we are educating people on what is disability justice, like how can we fight for disabled people's rights, because in the end, majority of people will become disabled. Most of us are pre-disabled, because as we get older, you develop disabilities. So everyone at some point will have some form of disability. And so it's important to advocate, you know, so, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And of course, invisible disabilities. I think there are many people who sort of have the stereotype or the idea that if it's just not catastrophic, like if you're not flat on your back or in a wheelchair or in a coma,
mm-hmm.
right? If they can't see it, it's not there. And yet we find out when we have conversations, even with our friends and neighbors and all, everybody's got their something, right?
Right, exactly. I feel like that's such a major stereotype, you know, across the board, that if it isn't catastrophic, if you're not in a wheelchair, you're not using a cane, it's not visible, it's not a physical disability, then it doesn't count, you know, and
mm-hmm.
that can turn into the stigma of like, oh, you're complaining, you're asking for too much assistance, you know, the stereotypes around like depending on, you know, Social Security funds like SSI,
mm-hmm.
when these things are essential, because disabled people deserve to live, you know, and so
yes.
we need to be able to mm-hmm. have resources that help us with equity and equality. And so we especially focus at Sister Creative Rising on invisible disabilities, because again, our family is invisibly disabled, and we've dealt with the ableism that can come along with that, because
uh-huh.
you know, we don't look, you know, sick,
uh-huh.
or like the stereotype of what uh-huh. a sick person would be.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. I see a pair, a terrible pair of obstacles to many artists, and there's probably more, but I'm thinking about the combination of racism and ableism. Does that make things
yeah.
more difficult?
Oh, absolutely. I feel, Free Sisters, we have worked with so many artists of color,
mm-hmm.
and many of which who are also disabled, and the time and time again, what we hear from them is the combination of
mm-hmm.
racism and ableism, making it harder for them to be listened to at the doctor,
uh-huh.
to, like you said earlier, get funding, get grants,
mm-hmm.
To be taken seriously by a therapist, you know, or psychologist, psychiatrist that won't gaslight them when they talk about racial trauma
uh-huh.
and how that impacted their disability. And even like getting diagnosed for, you know, any kind of disability, especially like, you know, being neurodivergent, like if you're trying to pursue that diagnosis, because there's so little representation.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel through the internet, we're starting to see some representation, but you still have to go seek it out to find other people who look like you, who are disabled, and be like, oh, wow, I'm dealing with this condition as well. Maybe I need to pursue a diagnosis. So there's all these different things, these factors that come together. And when you're facing racism and ableism together, which is something that we've dealt with on a constant, you know, constant basis,
mm-hmm.
it causes so much stress, and it just makes you sicker, and it causes you to not. It's very hard to advocate for yourself because you're dealing with microaggressions or macroaggressions, and then on top of that, you're being judged for being disabled or being judged on whether you're disabled or you're lying about it. So it's just such a multifaceted thing, and there's still not enough understanding for, you know, from people who aren't BIPOC, you know, white people who don't get that. And it's very, it is so integral into what we do, is making sure we always find a way to highlight these issues.
Yes, right. And let's add two more to the mix. Gender bias, and then class or economic. How do those impact the arts you're talking about?
Well, again, I would say, too, we've worked with artists who have been dependent on SSI or, you know, Social Security benefits. We've talked to them. If we haven't collaborated with them, we've had conversations with them. I've also known artists who have applied for disability benefits and they get rejected even though they clearly have a disability. It's very clear when you speak with them, when they, you know, when they even will work with like a therapist, and they'll be like, yes, you're disabled, but because the system is so difficult to convince that you have a disability, it causes this economic problem where like you're living, you know, in the lower class, and you're not able to support yourself. And so what we see with a lot of these artists is we see them having to constantly fundraise. There's so many artists right now that I follow, poets, you know, workshop developers, you know, actors, graphic artists who are disabled and they have multiple disabilities, and they're fundraising for like $1,000 per week just so they could pay their rent because the system refuses to give them Social Security support. And then when you get that Social Security support, it's under, you know, minimum wage. So you're only getting a couple hundred per month if you're lucky, you know. So there's that part. And then with the gender biases, it's so hard to, I guess I'll pull from my experience as a Black disabled woman, it is very difficult to, well, first, it took me until I was like 21 to get my diagnosis. And I think part of it was, you know, having to fight to understand that I have panic disorder, that I have agoraphobia, and complex PTSD, was that people wouldn't take me seriously as a Black woman, that, or they would see me as if I'm standing up for myself, or that disabled Black people, you know, if I go and if I try to speak with my community, with other people who are Black but they're not disabled, then they don't understand disability because of stigma that, oh, we go through so much already, adding that on top of it, you know, it's too much. So not being taken seriously and having to cut off family as a result of that. So having to fight and be understood as for as my full identity as a Black disabled woman that I'm very proud to be, and you have people denying that because you're a woman, because you're you know, a person of color, that, and then having to deal with all of that, it took me from between I would say between 8 years old and 21 finally get it figured out. And now I'm on the journey of learning that I might have ADHD. And now I'm on the full journey of realizing, oh, I'm neurodivergent. And now that explains why I interact in the, you know, with the world in a certain way. So it has, learning that people who are neurodivergent and Black, especially if they're a Black woman, are underdiagnosed because of this idea that, in the Black community, we might, that, oh, we can't have this, and the other end of lack of representation, and then the idea that when we're when we'll be seen as acting out or too aggressive, when we're just having an experience that is coming from a neurodivergent, you know, brain, you know, from a perspective, mm-hmm. that is a lot to fight through. And so that's why a lot of my art is focused on this kind of work, you know, both independently and just through sisters as well.
I appreciate you sharing so much of your heart with us, because I feel like it's really important for us to have these kinds of conversations just to stop daily life and talk about these issues. Because one of the things that really leapt out when you were saying this, you know, is so many of our artists and authors who we revere and teach about and put in the canon and consider classics were disabled.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, Frida Kahlo, Moliere had consumption. I mean, we had people who had all kinds of things that they were dealing with that perhaps informed their art, but certainly shaped them as an artist. What do you think is the difference now when so many artists before had all kinds of things? I mean, from challenges with their mental health to physical challenges.
Yeah, I would say the difference between then and now is that now, again, because of the internet, is like we're learning uh-huh. about these activists from the past
uh-huh.
who had disabilities, and that you know, Frida Kahlo, she was very explicit about her disability, but
uh-huh.
when you learn about other activists, you realize, oh my God, they had a disability too. Like Fannie Lou Hammer,
uh-huh.
you realize like some of these activists, they would hide their disability, or they couldn't have it as a major part of their activism
uh-huh.
because if they talked about it, they would be rejected from civil rights movements.
Uh-huh.
So from what we're doing, what we're seeing now, because of the internet, I'll give an example. My mom and I were part of a virtual summit called Ramp Your Voice.
Mm-hmm.
And it was highlighting Black disabled voices. And it was mm-hmm. created by a Black disabled activist by Lissa Thompson. And she had this project called Ramp Your Voice for a long time, highlighting her work and her experiences. And she decided to pull together these Black disabled voices, because she said, like, we don't have our representation, and there's so many of us, but we're kind of disjointed, we're not all like connected. And so
mm-hmm.
she decided to, you know, make sure that people would get funded to speak and tell these stories,
mm-hmm.
because we needed to see in one place through this, like, I feel it was probably a 5-hour virtual event, to show, like, hey, we're here, we're proud of our identities, and we want to encourage people to understand that, hey, you might be disabled too, and you might not realize it because, you know, you don't see other people like you. So,
mm-hmm.
because the internet has made it so, like, I've been able to figure out, like, oh, I have this, and now I can go advocate. With my mom, uh-huh. she's been able to do that. You know, with my dad, he's learning that as well. So, and I'm just seeing it across the board. You see it on TikTok, you see it on Instagram. People are like, oh, I have a disability. And you have these people, you know, they're having this realization. So I feel like we've made so much progress. There's still a lot. There's
uh-huh.
still so much. But we're just seeing ways to finally connect to each other, especially if you're homebound.
Uh-huh.
Now we finally have a way to meet other people who are like us.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's the most wonderful thing to have all of this technology. And so much of it is
Absolutely.
Free. So much of it is free, even though, you know, some areas of the country, Wi-Fi is hard to come by, like the mountains of North Carolina, where we have difficulty here. But still, I mean, Zoom is free, and these social media apps, and they do create community. They can be used wisely to help advocate, but also just to connect, you know. I was
mm-hmm.
listening to a wonderful woman talking about her experience, and she was saying that for the first time she has real friends. she feels like. Not just caretakers or people who, you know, check on her or family members, but real friends that share interests and all of that because of this technology. So what does the technology mean to you and to your project?
Well, it means, oh my gosh, it means everything to us because we've been homebound. I would say since before COVID, we've been pretty isolated. And it was very difficult to be able to do art projects, art shows. Like, we've done them in person. We've based in New Hampshire, so it's very difficult to do this kind of work here, talking about race and gender and disability and all these, you know, and queerness and how it all comes together. And how they're all connected, and using art to highlight those experiences. New Hampshire is majority white, and it's under 2% black. The number is even lower for the amount of black women that are here. So I can't remember what it was, but I'm pretty sure it's under 1% are black women. So it was very difficult to talk about these issues here, and we started to give up. And we, once the pandemic hit and we started realizing, oh my gosh, we're losing more opportunities. We started using the internet to connect with people more and more. And we realized, oh my gosh, we could connect to an international community. We could connect to people in Boston, where a lot of our funding has come from Boston. And so because of the internet, we realized we could do this ourselves. We don't have to depend on a gallery who might be biased against people of color, or might be biased because they only want to have fine artists, or they see. I remember like a gallery when I first started out doing art coordinating and creative directing during the beginning of the pandemic. I remember seeing a gallery that said, we don't want political art that is not going to, that's going to ugly our walls or something to that extent. And they only had one artist of color. Everyone else was a white artist who was like maybe over 50 or 60 years old. So they didn't care. So I decided, I'm tired of seeing galleries like this. And my mom said the same. And that's how we developed Art in Mind, and we realized we could do this through Zoom. We could, and because of Zoom, we can make sure that there's captioning. So there's auto captioning that people could turn on. We can make sure that all of our videos and films are open captioned. You know, all the videos we put on our YouTube, which is Art in Mind series, we can make sure that there's closed captioning as well, so people can make it more accessible to them and customize those captions. So we do, you know, we do self-ID, we do image descriptions, we do all these different things. And because of the internet, we learned about these disability tools. And then we connected with other disabled people to learn how we could improve those tools and tactics and ideas and incorporate it into what we're doing. So it has made it so if we had something in person, not only would it not have the representation, but it wouldn't be accessible to disabled people the majority of the time. But because it's on the internet and it's through Zoom, and it's, we can make it free because all of our shows are free and people could choose to donate to our, you know, our micro grant fund, the Sisters Uprising Fund. We can make it so then it is as accessible as possible. And so because of it, of all this now, we can build upon that, and as we get bigger and bigger, then we can make it even more accessible and add even more tools. And so it has just opened this world for us that still so many people don't realize. I feel like people are starting to realize at the beginning of COVID, but I feel now that we are able to raise awareness about these tools, and we want to work with people to make sure that they can learn these things too. So it is so crucial to have these virtual events.
Absolutely. We have to go to commercial for just a moment, but I would be thrilled if you would tell us where we can find you and connect with you and follow you so folks can do that while they listen to these messages.
Oh, of course. Yeah, again, sistercreativesrising.com, sistercreativesrising on Instagram and LinkedIn. our YouTube Art in Mind series. And email info@sistercreativethriving.com if you want to chat with us.
Perfect. We'll do that while we listen to this, and we'll be right back.
Lord, can you come and save her? Better believe they get on their knees and pray hard. They pray hard and never look back once the world forgave you.
TalkTainmentRadio.com podcast is another way to go for those of you that's on the go. You can now get your favorite programs on most new cell phone technology. Let us work like a DVR and enjoy our podcast for those shows you can't fit in your busy schedule. The Road to Featured Podcast. Type in TalkTainmentRadio.com. Go to homepage, scroll down to Featured Podcast, click on Play or click on Subscribe for more programs. Or you have the option to download. Podcast is the way to go for you busy folks. The world's greatest radio. TalkTainmentRadio.com. Another reason to come. Another reason to stay. Radio, the way it should be heard.
Hi, everyone. Al Roker here. As a guy with his own catchphrase, I appreciate that after 75 years, Smokey's only said,
"Only you can prevent wildfires."
But I'm filling in because there's a lot more to report. Like when it's dry or windy. Be careful burning yard waste, because wildfires can even start in your neck of the woods. Go to SmokeyBear.com to learn more about wildfire prevention. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
I can't believe he found them.
He seems sorry.
We very clearly told him not to look up there.
I'm honestly impressed that he was able to do it.
Right? What did he balance on that big chair?
Or? Yeah, I mean, I guess he'll just know what his gifts are this year.
I really thought we had hidden them well.
If they can find their presents, they can find a gun.
911, what is your emergency?
Every day, 8 kids and teens are unintentionally killed or injured by loaded and unlocked guns. Learn how to make your home safer at endfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and End Family Fire.
Hey, I'm Haley Kiyoko, and I know what it's like to struggle with mental health issues. If you have a friend that's going through a tough time, now is the perfect moment to reach out. Learn how to start the conversation at seizetheawkward.org.
Brought to you by the Ad Council, the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and the Jed Foundation.
Hey, it's me, your cell phone. We need to talk about something. Something serious. I know you love me. I know you like using me wherever you are. But I feel like this isn't working out when you're driving. I know you may think that it's possible to focus both on me and the road, but I just don't feel the same way. I think we should spend time away from each other when you're driving. It's for the best.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Peace Corps. Life is calling. How far will you go? To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580 or visit PeaceCorps.gov.
What a wonderful conversation we're having about a truly fabulous project. Will you please reintroduce yourself to us?
Yeah, thank you again. This is Amarantha Scipia. I'm the co-founder of Sista Creative Thriving.
Welcome. I'm so happy you're here. I'm so thankful that you're here. And now I really want to talk a great deal about this project and some of the wonderful things that you're funding and some of the artists that you're supporting and helping and the difference it's making in the art community. So would you please talk to us about your fund and your microgrants?
Yes. So the Sisters Uprising Fund, it's a microgrant project that is incorporated into our Art in Mind virtual art shows. And we started it last year with our second Art and Mind show, which was called Journey of Color and then Some Expressing Creative. So we, through Art and Mind, we fundraise for this micro grant fund. And it depends on the theme of Art and Mind. So since the theme last year was focused on BIWOC, you know, Black Indigenous Women of Color and Femme Expressing Creatives of Color, we were able to fundraise about $1,453, I believe. And that was to create, this is the first time we actually met a goal with fundraising.
Wow.
Like, we went over a goal of 1,000. And we were able to divide that into 7 $200 micro grants with a goal of originally having 5. And we, I'll give credit to my mom again, that this was a project that she's been wanting to do since she was told that she had the risk of developing multiple myeloma in 2015. Mm. And for those who don't know, multiple myeloma is a blood cancer that is very rare. It's very common in the Black community. Mm. I believe she talked about it more in her the episode she did with you.
Yeah.
And so she was determined to create this fund to help with the original goal of helping marginalized women, or, you know, the women who are survivors of domestic violence, like her. She's a survivor of childhood domestic violence, mm-hmm. and she's originally from Barbados. And her mom was abused by her husband, my mom's dad. And so her mom passed in 2021, which was really devastating. It was right before my mom was diagnosed with cancer. Which was lymphoma, thankfully not multiple myeloma. And so she decided, I need to get back to this fund. I need to develop this. And so as she started to learn how to walk again, and because she lost her mobility, she did what was thought to be impossible, and she decided that I'm going to walk again. And she learned how to walk
again.
Wow. And she was in the 1% chance to walk again. So after her treatment and chemo and everything, she came to me and said, we're going to relaunch this, the Creative Rising, because we were trying to launch and then she got diagnosed. She said, we're going to do this fund. We're going to figure this out. And we fleshed it out. And as we led up to the second Art in Mind, one of our sponsors, Brain Arts Org from Boston, was like, you know what? This is time to do this fund, because we were originally going to fundraise for them. And we decided that we would do this and expand it, you know, as we go on and make it bigger. And so this year, 2024, we decided, okay, we're going to distribute these funds, these 7 grants, to BIWOC and Femme Expressing Creatives, such as you. And we had our open call and everything, and we had so many wonderful artists, we had so many submissions, and we just, you know, distributed these funds and made sure to create a virtual gallery, 3D gallery, that people could kind of walk through and see their art. We made sure to, when we distribute these funds, that we pay for fees, so then people get their full $200, because PayPal will always take a large amount of fees out. So we want to make sure that when we help these artists who are struggling, they get that full amount. And these artists have used it for, you know, making sure they could get art supplies. Like with you, you were able to get your beads for your beadwork and your glasses. So, we got so much amazing feedback about this, and we were actually able to add an 8th grant because of an organization called For All Things Digital, which is a Black-owned organization or business in Boston. So we realized, wow, we're really making impact with this. This is such a small amount, And we couldn't believe, like, the things people were doing with it. Mm-hmm. And so now, next year, we'll be fundraising again through the next Art in Mind, which will be about COVID and climate change. And then in 2026, we'll be doing our next open call. And this is all because my mom, she just came back from cancer, and she kicked his butt and said, you know what? Her call to action is to get ahead of life before life gets ahead of you. And she said, I'm gonna stop thinking I can't do this. I'm going to make sure I do this and get ahead, you know, of my life and make sure I can help other people. So I'm very proud of this project, and I can't wait to be able to give people more funds. So, yeah.
Oh, yes, I am very grateful for this project, and I sincerely thank you, and I am so grateful for the organization and all of it, and just the caring and the generosity that's involved, you know, just
thank
the empathy
you.
That's involved. So I thank you.
Well, thank you for submitting to us, and we're just so happy we were able to help out. And, you know, the story about your glasses, which we'll be sharing soon on our Instagram and website, is amazing. So I can't wait for people to hear about how the grant worked out for you. So, yeah, we really encourage people to check it out, the gallery and everything.
And so every artist represented also. I mean, I'm so impressed with this work being done. And sometimes in spite of physical pain, in spite of economic catastrophe, grief, just all kinds of issues, people are pressing on and creating art and using it to send out a message into the world, right? And that is so powerful. That is so wonderful. You know, sometimes that's all it takes. There are so many problems in people's lives that would be solved with just a little bit of money. That would be solved with some encouragement instead of constantly getting rejection letters. They get that one,
yes.
And it changes their whole
exactly.
trajectory. And you're doing that. You're changing people's lives. Could we talk about COVID and climate? I mean, I think, well, people are talking about both a lot, right? People are talking about COVID and they're talking about climate. But not necessarily together. So I would love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yes. So we are still pulling together the research between how COVID and climate are connected, but there's so many activists that are out there talking about how because of climate change, because of the warming of the planet, the melting of the ice caps, that more illnesses, more diseases are going to become more prevalent because they will thrive in this kind of environment, this warming environment. And you're already seeing it with, you know, ticks. You're seeing it with more people getting sick because of the heat and all these different things. And it's making people more vulnerable to illness, especially if they're getting displaced because of climate change. And so a disease like COVID, where, you know, you'll see the research on our Instagram, and even on our website, we have a project called Black and Still COVIDing. We have a slideshow where we share over 20 stories from different Black folks across the country who are still COVIDing because they're disabled or they're taking care of someone with a disability. And through that slideshow, you'll see all these different statistics about how COVID is affecting these communities. And I believe that WHO, WHO has, like, reflected that. I believe now it's, like, 1 in 5 people who have a COVID infection will develop long COVID. I'll have to double-check that, but I'm pretty sure that's what it is. So the more COVID infections you get, the higher risk you are at developing long COVID. There are studies now that are this Instagram page, this activist page called COVID Safe Colorado, which showcases studies from epidemiologists and cancer doctors who are saying that COVID can actually trigger dormant cancer, so cancer that you don't even know about. And so this is why my mom is very cautious and my dad, you know, is very cautious, because the more studies coming out saying that this is actually can affect people who are at risk of blood cancer, or it can cause development of blood cancer. And being, you know, her having the risk of lymphoma and multiple myeloma, that would be very bad. It would accelerate and cause her to possibly be diagnosed with multiple myeloma at an earlier time than, so it could cause it to show up. And so we try to highlight these experiences, these stories, these statistics, these studies to show that anyone can become very sick, that anyone can become disabled.
Mm-hmm.
And now, because of climate change, it's just going to become worse because mm-hmm. of having people having to migrate, people having to leave their homes. You know, and like I said, with the warming of the planet, it makes these things more prevalent. And now you hear mm-hmm. these things about the bird flu as well.
Yes.
And so many epidemiologists are saying the same thing, mm-hmm. that we're making the same mistakes that we did with COVID, where we're not doing the public health work. We're not raising mm-hmm. awareness about mm-hmm. these issues happening. So another pandemic, whether it's bird flu or something else, could happen again easily because of all these different things occurring and people mm-hmm. refusing to realize, like, this can affect anyone at any time.
Mm-hmm.
And so we try to make sure that we tell these stories, these, like, things that disabled people have had to do, so because we don't want other people to get sick over something that is totally preventable.
Mm-hmm.
So with this next are in mind, talking about COVID and climate, we want to focus on highlighting, you know, disabled artists who are mostly BIPOC, to show that this is what they're doing, this is the art that they're creating, and show this research and have speakers and have, you know, a therapist speaker. We worked with a Black disabled COVID conscious therapist named Amanda McGuire, who wants to join us again next year to
mm-hmm.
share this research and share how it's affecting people mental health wise.
Yeah.
So we want to make sure that we get these resources out there so people could, you know, be aware and find other community that are isolating because they don't have a choice
mm-hmm.
but to isolate. So I can't wait to develop this further and go deeper into the research and, you know, get this out there. And we just want to make sure that we're helping to fund these artists because this group of artists especially, they don't have a lot of funding
mm-hmm.
Because they're so isolated.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. And, you know, it's interesting to me as part of the Indigenous heritage, pandemics and genocide and colonization are an enormous mm-hmm. part of why there's so few of us as Indigenous
yes,
people.
Yes, yes.
Right? I mean, we take this seriously. We understand what this literally, I mean, this is decimation. And we
Absolutely.
Understand that. And yet, you know, we've kind of got a culture that denies, you know, you got to live your life. Okay, well, good luck with that. Or, oh,
yes.
there's a mythology, it's mild, it's just a mild cold. Is it, though? I mean, wow. I mean, we've seen public officials crash and burn because of a COVID infection.
Yes.
Right? I mean, on camera, we're like,
yes.
wow, what? Brain damage and cardiovascular damage and cancer and then our children, my goodness. My goodness.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we're talking
about... That is a whole nother...
Oh.
Yeah.
I mean, it's horrifying, prenatal, you know, our children. And so you're very bold to speak the truth, even in this particular climate, cultural climate, you know, to say, hey, you
Thank
know,
you so much.
Climate change is real, COVID is real, and both are terrifying. And I appreciate you being willing to speak up, even in a time when you're swimming upstream.
Oh, yes. Yes. Thank you for saying that. And I just wish that, you know, people become more aware about these, about COVID, about climate change before it's too late. And we're getting to a point where it's going to be too late because so many have caught it so many times. They've caught it more than once. And even if you have it, it's if it's mild, if it's mild, you could still suddenly become disabled and you have no idea because maybe you're asymptomatic. So, and so it's very hard to get people to listen who aren't in the disabled community. But, you know, as at this time, as of this date, we have over 1 million infections per day, and that's just from CDC data. You compile all the data and you look at all the cases happening. There's data scientists who are pulling together charts and saying, hey, we're at over 1 million cases per day. And so, and it's up in over 27 states. And now I believe even reading yesterday that WHO is a bit concerned. There's some scientists who are concerned that the variants have changed so much that it might become undetectable in wastewater, which means how are we going to even track it? How are we going to know to diagnose people?
Or a surge?
How
we
won't
even
know
that.
Yeah, we wouldn't know because how do we make sure that we can support the people who get sick, that they can get treatment? And that we could, you know, try our best to prevent disability, but there hasn't been much luck with preventing long COVID. So there's no treatment for it, and Paxlovid doesn't necessarily, you know, prevent it. So, you know, the research is out there. Again, it's on our web, it's on our website, and it's in our slideshow, it's on our Instagram. There's so many resources like COVID Safe Colorado, Mask Together America is another one. They're talking about this. And, you know, if you, anyone could be vulnerable. And if you're around other, if you're a person who's at risk, if you know other people who are at risk, I encourage people to learn about it and realize that it's not over.
Thank you so much for speaking so boldly about this and the World Health Network. There are so many resources that we can find and learn more about this. But the one thing that I believe at this point, I was listening to someone else. It was not my conversation, but I heard this conversation, and the person was upset because another person kept talking to them about masking. And you can start masking right now. If you didn't wear, we wear masks. We wear them indoors, outdoors. We hardly leave the house, but when we do, we tend to do things outdoors and out on Zoom, and we wear our masks, and we take it seriously, and every precaution, far UVC, all of it. And this person was complaining because someone else was nagging them, as they put it, about COVID. And they said, yeah, well, you know, I don't want to hear that. I don't care about that. I don't want to hear that. And the person very gently said to them, well, when there's someone you love enough, you will. And they mentioned that to me and said, what did you think? And I said, that's 100% because I'm a mother and I had a high-risk pregnancy. And so I was living this way before my child was born, right? And then, oh, here's your baby. Thank you so much. Ah, a pandemic. And we made up our minds that we would protect our child with all, just at all costs. And so we made radical decisions. We've made choices and we've stuck to them so that none of us have ever had COVID and neither has the baby. And
That is the right thing to do.
Yes.
It really is.
But only love can power that. That would be the one thing that will motivate all of this love. Absolutely. And that's what your project, your fund, your disability justice is rooted in, and it's one of the reasons that I admire you and your precious mother so much.
Well, thank you. That's so sweet of you to say. I really appreciate hearing that.
Well, it's wonderful work that you're doing, and I thank you for doing it. I really do. I thank you for doing it and the courage that goes with it. Would you please, one more time before we go, tell us how we could help you
You've helped so many people, and we appreciate you and we thank you. But if there are people, we have 160 countries where we reach and all 50 states of the United States. And so there may be someone who's in a position to help you or to help you do what you do. So tell them how they can do that.
Well, we're always looking for sponsors and grants that we can apply to. We're in the process of applying for grants for the next Art in Mind. And we are just always looking for partnerships to be able to build upon what we're doing. And we are looking into eventually building like a consultation service so we could work with other people who are interested in virtual programming and making it accessible. A lot of our experience with us was lived experience. So we're not like exactly experts, but it's just we're, I would say, experts through lived experience. And so we want to be able to share that with people. So, you know, people can support us in that way of just funding our work. We have a donation link on our website, and it's also in our Instagram. People could donate on PayPal, and the donations just help us live off of our work. It helps us get a meal. It helps us get equipment. Like, we were able to get, like, a tripod and, like, accessories for our computer to make sure that, you know, we could stream or work better. We can make better programming. We can get editing programs, things like that. And as I believe my mom mentioned, you know, we've had a job loss in the family.
Yeah.
And we've shared a bit about that on our Instagram. We have a pinned post on our Instagram that explains it. And my dad is in a temporary job right now that ends in October. He's interviewing for full-time work. He's an IT business analyst. And so he's just looking for remote full-time work so we could continue to stay safe. And so, you know, any... you know, support or connections around that, or just, you know, donating to just help us during this time, make sure that we could pay our bills and things, buy food, so that people have been able to help us with fundraising, and it's helped us so much since May when this occurred. So we encourage people to check that out. Again, it's the button on the top of our website, sistercreativesrising.com, or just our Instagram, sistercreativesrising. And, yeah, we're always just looking for artists to work with. You know, if you're interested, we are doing scouting for the next Art in Mind. We're looking for COVID-conscious artists who want to share their story through video. We've scouted a few, and we're looking for a few more, and so we just want to, you know, open our options up. So
Beautiful.
If you're someone who would be interested in talking to us, email us, info@sistercreativerising.com.
Perfect. Absolutely perfect. Well, we have really, truly loved everything that you shared with us today and enjoyed this conversation so much. Thank you for having it with us.
Oh, of course. Thank you for having me. I'm so glad to be able to, you know, share a bit of my story and how this all came together. And thank you for letting us tell our story of helping artists and how we got here. I just really love the opportunity to be able to speak to another fellow COVID-conscious person of color. So,
Well, thank you for helping me, and thank you for helping so many. And to all of you who listen, we are so grateful for you. Thank you for our sponsors, our donors, our platforms, our friends, our prayer warriors, those who are friends and listen and share. Thank you. I'm Dr. Dawn Karima, and we'll see you next time.
Come and save her. Better believe they get on their knees and pray all. They pray all. Ain't never look back once the world forgave you.
Yeah, oh Lord, can you come and save her? Better believe they get on their knees and pray hard, then pray hard, and never look back once the war forgave.
You've got the power, the world's greatest radio, talktainmentradio.com.